Support comes from Mosby Building Arts, creating bathrooms for daily rejuvenation. More at callmosby.com.
This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. Coffee is a big business. In the United States alone, it has an economic value upwards of $340 billion annually. Of course, coffee has a big economic impact on the countries where it's grown. But in spite of global demand, coffee farmers and producers are often exploited. A bit later in the show, we'll talk with a St. Louis coffee shop owner and roaster about how the topsy-turvy coffee market is affecting his business. For now, we're going to stay on that story of exploitation. Ethiopia is Africa's largest producer of coffee, and a St. Louis University student from Ethiopia started a company that aims to connect coffee farmers in his homeland to roasters in the U.S. The company is called Moy Coffee, and today, St. Louis Public Radio reporter Marissa Ann Lewis-Thompson shares the story of how one entrepreneur is humanizing the coffee industry, one bean at a time.
The smell of coffee lingers at First Crack, a roasting facility in St. Louis. Frau Ahmed is grinding up several batches of freshly roasted coffee beans. He tugs the lever twice to get every coffee ground out. Near him is a large wooden table with six white cups and six different sample-sized bags of coffee beans neatly laid out. This coffee connoisseur pulled out the good stuff, grade one Ethiopian coffee beans, because today is cupping day.
Right now we're tasting these coffees, giving them a score, giving them a tasting note that we find in a coffee so that it's easier for our customers here to make a decision in purchasing these coffees from producers in Ethiopia.
This isn't a process that can be done in one sitting, but he has it down to a science. First, he light roasts the green coffee beans to a medium brown. 48 hours later, he pours the coffee bean samples into individual white cups that are weighed before they're ground up. Ahmed is meticulous with each step.
The goal is essentially to make sure the coffee is consistent, right? Some coffees, if it's not good quality, it might smell good when it's dry, and then you add the water and it would start smelling different. So you're looking for consistency across the brewing method.
Then he starts cupping the coffee. Basically, your sense of taste and smell need to be on point for this part. Ahmed sniffs each cup of coffee grounds before adding hot water to them.
We're approaching 4 minutes, so 4 minutes, and then I'll just go ahead and break it and smell it while I do it.
Ahmed is teaching me how to break the steeping process. We place a clean metal spoon in the cup using a backwards and forwards motion to smell the fresh brew again. We're looking for fruity, floral, sweet, or nutty notes.
Smell it while you're breaking it. There we go. That's good. For
okay.
Your first break, that's
now,
very good.
Now I do smell like that fruity type of floral essence.
Ethiopian coffee's signature smell is fruity. That's because it's grown at a high altitude. We're talking 7,000 feet.
That gives it this complex flavor and fruit-forward taste that a lot of roasters love.
He scrapes off the top layer of foam with two spoons, and finally, it's time to taste. He grabs one more spoon, scoops up a bit of coffee from the cup, and quickly slurps it down.
Sometimes it's loud. You go... And then you clean off your spoon and we go to the next.
He writes down some notes and repeats this process over and over again.
Just gonna go to home quickly. Oh, that's a good one.
All of this attention to detail is a key part of Ahmed's business, Moy Coffee. The online platform partners with Ethiopian coffee farmers and producers and connects them to independent roasters in the U.S.
Moy means win. I think with what we're working on currently is we're helping out the producers by giving them access to direct international market. And we're also helping out the roasters by allowing them to buy directly from the source.
The goal is to expand Moy Coffee beyond Ethiopia. Andy Irakoze co-founded Moy Coffee alongside Ahmed. He says the coffee supply chain is broken for a lot of farmers across the globe.
They always have to sell to multiple middlemen and not get even paid their fair price. And that's something that if you go to Colombia, if you go to Brazil, all the farmers there, they will tell you, kind of, they all have the same shared story.
Irakoze is from Burundi. The small country in South Central Africa is also a coffee producer. The duo have taken steps to safeguard their platform from greedy middlemen vying for access to the international market. Irakoze says each farmer and roaster that creates an account on their website receives a background check.
Building that step of verification ensures that the people that are on the platform are actually trustworthy. Or the roasters there, they actually own businesses, they actually want to buy coffee, and the farmers there, they are actually the farmers that produces the coffee that they want to sell.
Full disclosure, Moy Coffee makes money by charging a service fee to buyers. In exchange for the fee, the pair collect the coffee beans from the producers and farmers in Ethiopia, bring it to the U.S., and distribute it to the independent roasters.
But the price, everything that's paid to them on the platform goes directly to the producers.
Ahmed says their company puts the selling power back in the hands of farmers and producers.
We just allow producers to give price to their coffees themselves. So you produce this coffee, you know the coffee that is value more than anyone else. If you think it's worth $100 a pound, go for it. And if someone's willing to pay, it's a free market. You know, it's not our business to tell you what your coffee is worth because you produced it.
The St. Louis University senior has been on a mission to fix a broken supply chain that leaves coffee farmers and producers in Ethiopia with little to no selling power. Ahmed says part of the problem is that there are too many middlemen taking advantage of farmers. Oftentimes, the middlemen are buying the coffee well below its actual value.
So as a farmer, you have to make a choice. You say, goodness, do I wait for another buyer who's going to give me the right price? But I don't know when that buyer is going to come or if he's going to come. Or do I just take this and make sure my family is not going to struggle?
Ahmed has seen the same scenario play out in his own family. His great-grandfather and grandfather were coffee farmers.
My grandpa starts working on a farm at a very young age. This is 60, 70 years ago. And gets into coffee, right? Takes over the farm and every time they produce coffee, they would have to sell to these middlemen at a very low price because they need the cash to survive. And then that actually led my grandpa to start looking at different opportunities and become a merchant and kind of not be a coffee farmer anymore.
It's only recently that his grandfather has been able to go back to coffee farming. Roughly 25% of Ethiopians depend directly or indirectly on the coffee supply chain to make ends meet. That's according to a 2023 report from the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Foreign Agricultural Service. These realities set the groundwork for Ahmed co-founding Moy Coffee nearly 3 years ago out of his SLU dorm room. It all started when his mom took a trip back home to Ethiopia and brought back some coffee beans from the family farm.
I think it's a part of like being Ethiopian, wanting to like a very service-based community and like always wanting to share. And when my mom brought back coffee from Ethiopia, specifically from my own family's farm, I thought, okay, a better way to enjoy this is actually to let someone else also enjoy it.
He ended up sharing some of it with his SLU track coaches and teammates, and it was a hit.
It was like, where can I buy this? I want a whole bag.
That eventually spiraled into him roasting 22 bags of coffee. We're talking 30 pounds of coffee sitting under his dorm room bed.
The only thing I was thinking is, how the heck do I get rid of this coffee? Because I have to get rid of it.
So he put out a call on social media that he had Ethiopian coffee to sell. It sold out and people wanted even more. He shut down his website for 9 days, made some calls, and got some more. He tried to put the coffee in coffee shops in St. Louis. Ahmed was shut down, but those no's inspired him to strike out on his own.
My family's history in coffee, considering all this, I thought, okay, I actually have a competitive advantage compared to, you know, the big companies just going to Ethiopia to import. I have a better story to tell and I have better connection with the people behind the coffees being produced.
Irakoze, also a SLU grad, even quit his full-time job to help build the startup's digital platform from the ground up.
You know, when you're young, you look at yourself and it's like, what could go worse?
Part of what makes Moy Coffee unique is that it amplifies the voices of the Ethiopian coffee farmers and producers on its platform. Sharing their stories is one way Ahmed is working to put humanity back into coffee. Ahmed went back to Ethiopia in December during peak harvest season to see just how much time, dedication, and labor goes into a single cup of coffee. First up is Alo Coffee's site, based in Sidama. Here, there's a nursery to protect the coffee trees and cherries from burning to a crisp in the hot sun. Coffee cherries are red berry clusters that grow from coffee trees. In the coffee world, those berries are known as coffee cherries. Inside the cherry is the seed that we all know as the coffee bean. The cherries go through a vigorous wash in a machine that helps separate the cherry from the seed. In a separate section of the site, there's a group of young women in a shed scooping out fermented coffee cherries out of large blue plastic drums. The cherries are added to one of the many long wooden beds to dry out in the sun. They do this work singing.
It is so amazing. They're so good at it as well. Like one of them would just start a new song, and in 3 to 5 seconds, the entire group has picked it up.
This is just one of the places Ahmed visited. Right now, you're hearing the sounds of the Herafa coffee station in Bensa, Sidama, Ethiopia. It's way up in the mountains, and the view is stunning. There are countless rows of coffee beans spread out on wood beds. Wet coffee cherries are purchased and processed on site.
Yep.
Samson Zai is showing Ahmed around the site. He's a coffee producer and the co-founder of Ant Coffee. His company works with about 400 farmers. Zai has been a coffee producer for 2 years, but coffee farming has been in his family for generations.
Most of my family still lives in Harar. It's another beautiful coffee region in Ethiopia. But as a coffee farmer, they don't get much out of it. Their life never changes.
Zai, like Ahmed, also wants to change that outlook. He decided to partner with Moy Coffee because its vision perfectly aligned with his.
I want to give a chance for the local farmers. That way they be known by the world what they have in hand. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a fair change.
One of those farmers is Yusana Yure. He's a farmer in the Sidama region of Ethiopia, and he partners with Zai's Ant Coffee.
I've been a coffee farmer for 12 years. I used to be a merchant, but I met a person who came back from the States. And since I had about 7 hectares of land, he convinced me to become a coffee farmer. What would make me really happy is if people who buy our coffees learn more about the effort we put into producing these coffees and how much care we put into it.
To Ethiopian farmers, coffee is life.
They would say coffee is like a child. You have to take care of it. It's like coffee is like your child. They don't take coffee trees lightly. They're getting up every morning, watering it if they need to water it, taking care of it, and then picking cherries that are ripe and they're ready to be picked.
Some farmers are so hardcore that they paint their fingernails with polish, the same color as the cherries, to ensure it's ripe enough to pick. Ahmed even shared that trick of the trade with his family.
And I came back to my family and said, you guys are doing it wrong. We need some nail polish in this house.
Change is slow, but Zai says things are improving.
Recently, it's changing. And they're selling with a better price. Even producers, they're building schools. They're partnering with roasters, buyers from different parts of the world. And they're changing the livelihood of farmers.
Back in St. Louis, Frau Ahmed's mission is gaining traction. Independent roasters Moy Coffee works with are seeing the value of ethically sourced and priced high-quality Ethiopian coffee.
A lot of them love the idea of being able to go direct because it gives them the opportunity to tell their customers that they source this coffee directly from this person.
Our thanks to reporter Marissa Ann Lewis-Thompson for this story. Also thanks to Faral Ahmed of Moy Coffee for sharing video and audio from his recent trip to Ethiopia featured in this piece. We need to take a quick break, but when we come back, we'll talk with a St. Louis roaster and coffee shop owner about his work with Faral Ahmed and how he's dealing with the volatile coffee market. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio. Welcome back. I'm Eileen Cha. Let's continue today's conversation about coffee. To do that, I'm joined now by Jason Wilson. Jason is the owner of Northwest Coffee Roasting Company. His independent coffee shop is on Laclede in St. Louis's Central West End neighborhood. Jason Wilson, welcome back to St. Louis on the Air.
Thank you, Elaine. I appreciate it. I'm happy to be back.
So we were just listening together to that story from my colleague Marissa Ann Lewis-Thompson about the SLU student, Faral Ahmed's Moy Coffee and its mission. What were you thinking as you were listening to it?
I mean, I was thinking, you know, Faral is an amazing guy. I know him very well. Mm-hmm. And I've gotten to know him through coffee. I mean, he was, since he was interested in when he got to SLU, he had been reaching out to me, mm-hmm. coming to the coffee shop as a patron, then telling me he wanted to get, you know, he wanted to do some stuff in coffee. And I just started supporting him as much as I possibly could. Mm-hmm. It was easy. He asked me, I was just like, I got your back.
Okay.
And since then, we've created a relationship. So, mm-hmm. yeah, he's a good guy.
Well, great story. In the piece, he does say that it took some time. He got a lot of no's.
Yeah.
What was it about Frau that made you say yes?
Oh, for me, it was, I mean, he was young. He was a brother trying to get it going. And I know how hard it is out here. And so I just wanted to make sure I was available to help him out. Like mm-hmm. sometimes you have good ideas and you just need someone to give you that opportunity. And I didn't want to be another cog in the wheel that slowed him down. I wanted to be someone that helped him out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What did the support you offered him look like?
Well, he mentioned that 30-pound bag under his bed. I mean, he had more than that.
Sure.
But he was trying to get Moon Coffee and let people sample it. Mm-hmm. And so what I did was I allowed him to use my coffee brewers.
Okay.
And grinders. So we would grind the coffee up and brew it for him, or he would come in and do it himself on certain days where he had like events and samplings he wanted to put together.
Mm-hmm. So there was the equipment and then that physical space that
Correct.
You were offering him. When you tasted his mm-hmm. coffee, so we also hear in that piece
yeah.
you know, what cupping involves.
Yeah.
What is your memory of the coffee that you tasted?
I mean, you know, he buys a really good quality coffee. It cups at a good score. I mean, so I knew what he had, and when he was roasting his coffee at First Crack, so he would bring it over, and I would taste it, and I'd be like, this is some good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew that this is something I wanted to be a part of, and I became a buyer, a purchaser of his coffee
mm-hmm.
as well. Not the roasted coffee, but the green coffee.
The green coffee.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you have your own way of roasting.
Exactly. We have roast. We roast ourselves.
It's
yeah.
low and slow, I think, from
yeah,
what I see.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah, exactly. You read it correctly. Correct, yeah.
So you mentioned score. What does it mean to score coffee?
Cupping scores are metrics that they use to measure whether, you know, how good the coffee is.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about from its potency, the smell, the taste, the different imperfections in the coffee, all that is a part of the cupping score.
Mm-hmm.
And so his typically cups very high.
Okay.
And he, you know, I know by reading some of the regions that he gets coffee from, and also bought that coffee, some of that coffee from those regions before. So I knew it was spot on when he told me about it, and I tasted it. So mm-hmm. Yeah.
So was Northwest Coffee also the slurping site?
No. I think that was First Crack. First Crack is it's got an amazing setup over there, by the way. Mm-hmm. So you can go in there, you can roast it yourself with some tutorials.
Okay.
And also you can also do cuppings there. And we do it at our shop too, and we just kind of do it privately.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think one of the things that came out of Marissa Ann's story mm-hmm. is just how much story yeah. is part of Moy Coffee mm-hmm. and this idea of exploitation yeah. of coffee farmers and Firaul Ahmed's mission to address that by making direct connections.
Yeah.
What did that story do for you? How did that strike you?
You know, so once again, this has always been an issue for me in the coffee business, knowing that the farmers get paid less, right? The middlemen, the World Trade Organization, all these folks that are involved, they have a lot more money and leverage. They lean on the farmers. And so I've always wanted to, be a part of and have a way to help out the farmers, mm-hmm. you know, especially the women. The women are the ones that do all the labor, by the way. It's sad because it's the value of women in these different countries.
Mm-hmm.
So I always wanted to be a part of that. I buy women produce coffee mm-hmm. From different coffee farms in different countries. Sometimes price is the determining factor whether I will buy that versus, you know, another one. But I try my best to, you know, contribute as much as I possibly can. And with Farrell, what he's doing, I want to be a part of that for mm-hmm. sure.
Now, speaking about price, mm-hmm. there's been a lot in the news for those who are
yeah.
regular listeners to NPR content.
Yeah.
There's been so much about what is going on in the coffee market right
yeah.
now. In broad strokes, as you would paint it,
yeah.
what are you seeing in the coffee market now, Jason?
Oh, I see a couple of things. So, you know, prices are high, number one. And I think everyone knows that. It's the highest they've ever been. We're talking $4.30 a pound. For me, that's in 2 years, it's doubled twice. So for me, that's a lot for a smaller buyer. And it puts pressure on pricing. It puts pressure on these smaller businesses like myself. So what I'm seeing is, like, you know, speculative trading is having a total impact on increased prices in coffee, inclement weather,
yeah.
whether it be a drought or a rust or whatever. That has an impact as well as political issues, right? So, like, political instability dealing with either tariff wars. or just their, you know, internal government instability. So mm-hmm. all those things play a major factor in the price of coffee. And what people don't know is that, and what they should know, if you're interested, is that 70% of the coffee that's produced in the world, the inventory, comes from South America.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that has a real impact on the inventories of the world that. When it comes to buying coffee.
Mm-hmm. One of the companies that buys a lot of coffee
yeah.
is Starbucks.
Yeah.
And Starbucks, inevitably, it comes up as one of the first places people think about
yeah.
when they're asked about coffee. Actually, there's a location just over a mile from
yeah.
where Northwest Coffee is. What role does Starbucks specifically play in, you know, what you've described about, you know, the coffee market, about prices, about mm-hmm. availability against, you know, all of these different variables that are coming into play?
I mean, you know, Starbucks is the biggest, as you said. And so that means, what that means is that's 3-5% of the coffee being purchased. That's what Starbucks does. And I know it sounds like a small number, but for an entity to be 3-5%, that's a large controlling, entity
mm-hmm.
in the business. So right now what they're doing is, you know, they decided not to hedge their coffee buying.
Uh-huh.
And so What that means is that's $1 billion that they would typically hedge on, mm-hmm. and now they reduced it to $225 million roughly, right? So it's a 75% decrease. And what they're doing now is spot buying. So people like myself who spot buy, it puts pressure on the price, and it causes the price to increase. So they control Starbucks controls a lot of the pricing. They're the trendsetters in the game. Right now it's tough out here for the smaller coffee roasters, mm-hmm. definitely.
And so the effect of the not hedging,
yeah.
This is something that you are feeling.
I got to eat the cost, right? So I have to absorb the cost, and then I got to find a way to pass that price, pass it on
to the customer.
Now, there are ways for me to hedge against that, and I'm pulling out all the stops. One is talking to the wholesalers that I sell to, instead of them paying me 30, 60, 90 days, pay me immediately, right? Mm-hmm. So that way I have cash flow.
Yeah.
Not just me, but like a lot of smaller players have cash flow because buying power is key. I always think of it in terms of time, value, money. You know, it's a dollar today is worth more than it is tomorrow. Mm-hmm. so having the money up front allows me to do to buy when there are things that pop up, opportunities that pop up. We want to make sure we have the cash flow. So that's one way of really helping out the smaller and some of the mid-tier coffee roasters.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking with Jason Wilson, who is the owner of Northwest Coffee Roasting Company, and mm-hmm. we're discussing how volatilities in the coffee market have affected his business.
Yeah.
So when it comes to consumers mm-hmm. and costs that they're feeling, have you had to raise prices at Northwest Coffee?
You know, so I haven't raised prices in 2 years, and and I'm going to have to raise prices, but you know, I have to find ways to do it so it doesn't, deter the the buyer, the coffee buyer,
yeah.
right, who buys it per cup, because you know, like I said, prices are high, and not only that, but egg prices are incredibly high,
right,
and then we're limited on how many we can buy nowadays,
mm-hmm.
so all this is impacting now. Once again, I mean, you got to have the gravitas, the kahunas to stand in there and deal with the
speaking of
the
eggs,
fluctuation, yeah, right. But at the end of the day, I mean, that's what I have to do. You got to find ways to pass on the price, but you don't want to, you know, the market is price sensitive. You don't mm-hmm. want to scare off the customer, and you can only raise it so much because it's a very competitive market. They call it a monopolistic competition is what they call it.
Yeah. So in addition to coffee,
yeah.
there's also what people come in for, which mm-hmm. is, you know, it's different and it has to do with the experience that they have.
Yeah.
So what is it that you have banked on as far as you know, customers coming back?
Yeah.
To Northwest Coffee there on Laclede.
Yeah.
What sets your place apart?
You know, so good question. You know, we focus on the no frills. Like, we're not trying to romanticize the business because that doesn't really hold value to, mm-hmm. in my eyes. I'm not saying anyone else who does it should stop doing it. I mean, differentiations out there make for better opportunities for us. But you know, ours is, we're rustic. You're going to see how the coffee's roasted. I'm not going to romanticize and tell you it's better because I did this, that, and the other. It tastes good. I buy great coffee.
Mm-hmm.
And we try to keep it simple. You know, I don't, you know, that's kind of how I do it. And some of that is by design. Like, mm-hmm. I've never had enough capital injected into me since I've gotten the game. I've been hustling since day one.
Yeah, 2012, 2013.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Hopped in the game of coffee. Didn't have enough, but we made it happen. And that's how it's always been for me. So, and then that became, but then also that kind of became a way of my philosophy. Like, keep it simple. Like, mm-hmm. make great coffee. I don't want to get too many like outliers of like drinks, like Starbucks has like 1,000 different drinks, and now they're shrinking it down.
Right, right.
Right? And so I want to keep it simple.
Mm-hmm.
So we just keep it simple. We make great coffee, buy good products that go along with the coffee, and that's pretty much how we do it.
Mm-hmm. And part of the experience, obviously, is the coffee itself.
For sure.
And sort of taking it back to where we started
mm-hmm.
around ethically sourced coffee
yeah.
and coffee that you get from farmers who are not exploited. How do you balance what is happening with prices, with getting coffee from suppliers that are going to be treating people
right.
well?
I mean, you know, so you have to be cognizant of what's out there, right, what the opportunities are. So, you know, once again, you know, Farral is making, he's created an incredible platform that will allow us to talk directly to the farmers. But also, you know, they have fair trade. I mean, you have to trust that that they're honest and fair about the process.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's also women producing coffee farms. And there's also just direct relationships that you meet people over time, and you hope that they're doing, you know, they're playing above board essentially
yeah.
when it comes to that process. Otherwise, you know, it's you hope for the best. You just try to do your part, but it really is tough to really to see the transparency in the process.
Mm-hmm. And you also exist within a community of coffee roasters,
yeah.
right, and coffee shop owners.
Mm-hmm.
What is it about the future that is sort of keeping you up at night? Not the caffeine, but
oh, yeah, it's definitely the pricing. I mean, the price of coffee is high, and you know, if you don't have the capital to purchase the coffee, you know, it's going to be tough because prices, we're going to have to pass on that price at some point in time. Once again, Starbucks is also spot buying right now. So they're also subjected to the volatility of the pricing. So if a price goes up, they have to buy it at that price. Now, of course, they have volume-based buying. They have a lot more money. They can buy a little cheaper than what we can buy it for. But at the end of the day, the prices will go up. And that makes me nervous because it's going to shrink out the bottom of the market. The
mm-hmm.
smaller guys like myself, if they can't handle it, and if they don't have any strategies, if they have a lot of debt on their infrastructure, like their building that they built or whatever the case may be, that can put a constraint on their cash flow.
Mm-hmm. And in 30 seconds,
yeah.
why do people come to Northwest Coffee? I know why I go there.
Right.
What do people say to you?
Oh, they come in because the coffee is incredible. We slow roast our coffee. We buy great coffee. I think also my employees, Al, Claire, you know, Liz, Donovan, all of them are amazing people. We have a low turnover, and you know, you get what you get, just good quality coffee.
Jason Wilson is the owner of Northwest Coffee Roasters, located in St. Louis's Central West End. Jason, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Today's episode was produced by Marissa Ann Lewis Thompson.
And by our executive producer, Alex Hoyer.
With audio engineering and podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thanks.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri, St. Louis.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.